Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. Last season, we ended with an interview with Alicia Wood, and Alicia was such a wonderful guest, and we only had such a short amount of time to touch on her experiences, so I invited Alicia to come back to the show. Today, we're going to talk more in depth about her experience as a surrogate mother, and we're really going to focus on her last pregnancy. Welcome back to Venus Rising, Alicia.
Hi, thanks to being invited back onto the show.
Yes, I loved your story. I love that you were open and willing to share with us. And I just kept thinking, we have to have her back. And I know that a lot has happened since we've spoke last. But before we get started, can you give the listeners just a very brief recap of your surrogacy pregnancy experiences?
Yeah, of course. I'm a mother of four. I have an 18, 10, 8, and 6-year-old. And then I also was a surrogate mother four times. But I had three live births. The first one ended in a miscarriage. And so I just have the three of them. And, you know, we still stay in touch and stay in contact and get updates on it, which I really enjoy getting.
I'm sure. And last time we talked, you actually expressed how grateful you were to still be in contact with the children that you birthed via surrogacy. And I just wonder what it's like for surrogate mothers who don't have that contact. Do you think that it would affect you if you lost contact with these kiddos?
I think it would, you know, depends on what kind of relationship. I think while you were pregnant, what kind of relationship you had with them, if you stay in contact all the time, and then it just stopped right after the baby, that would be really hard when you are used to having contact with them. I understand that. Ours is more, I had close contact with them, and you know, now I talk like once a month with them, just kind of an update, see how they're doing. But yes, I think that would be a little hard to understand just not having that contact, but also they might just are busy and just don't think about it anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, I know it's not your child, so you don't need a kid updates on them. You know, it's nice to have updates on them and see how they're doing, but you know, people get busy in their lives and just you're kind of, you know, you did what you were supposed to do and that's kind of how it is. And it's just a blessing if you get that extra communication with them.
Sure. So I think the last time we talked, you'll have to refresh my memory a little bit, but you had each of your surrogate pregnancy experiences was with four different intended parents, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So let's fast forward then, and let's talk about your last and most recent pregnancy. Let's start at the beginning with that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, definitely. So I had a normal pregnancy. Everything was going fine. In about 33 weeks, I had a normal checkup with my OB. When I went in, I had pretty high blood pressure. And so she just wanted me to go to the postpartum, you know, the labor and delivery just to get checked out.
Mm-hmm. Like a triage situation.
Yeah. NST, the non-stress test. And so I went and got checked out and I ended up staying there for 3 days because my blood pressure wouldn't come down, but I didn't have the normal symptoms of swelling, lots of gain weight, baby looked big, just high blood pressure.
Okay.
And so we just had that going on and then got released after a couple of days. And then Saturday, I had woken up in the morning and I was leaning over to pet my cat. And all of a sudden, I felt this big pop and this just gush. I thought it was my water breaking, which panicked me anyways, because it was so early. I was about 34 weeks. And I, you know, touched to see and looked and it was blood. And so I was just bleeding. You know, my husband was like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I'm bleeding. And I didn't want him to panic like the kids. And so I'm like, lock the door, you know, and he's just, you know, what should we do? What do you want me to do? So it's just kind of a panic situation because, you know, you're worried. And
So I
called one of our friends. They came down and watched the kids. We rushed down to the hospital and we had already called on the way down, giving them information about what was going on. So we got to the hospital. They got us in right away. They weighed the amount of blood and it was very high, very heavy. Got me hooked up, let me know that more than likely we'll have to do an emergency C-section, just depending how baby was doing. Baby's heartbeat was great during the whole time. I still had pretty high blood pressure.
That's a relief for babe.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I called the intended mom. I just told her I was having contractions because she lives up in Idaho. So she had to find a flight to get down to Sacramento. You know, I didn't want to scare her and tell her I was also bleeding or anything. I waited until they got here, which she appreciated that she would have panicked even more if she knew what was, you know, a little bit more scarier. And then I stopped bleeding and just had contractions here and there. And I was already 5 centimeters. So they said they won't, you know, put me into labor, but they also won't stop it. So just kind of let my body see what happens. And then about the mom got down there, came in about 4 o'clock, and then she got to her hotel around 9. She stayed and we just kind of waited to see, did ultrasounds and everything was going fine. About 10 o'clock, she just left to the hotel. And then I had another big gush of blood, just bleeding in. I wasn't even moving. I was just sitting there and it just happened. So they came in and waited and checked me, checked the baby. They weren't seeing the reason why, you know, I was bleeding. And then I started dilating more. So they're like, okay, this happens one more time. We'll go in the emergency C-section. We'll just put you out and, you know, take baby.
You hadn't had a C-section before then, right, Alicia?
No, I've never had a C-section. I normally have just normal deliveries, never had anything like this happen. But luckily I was progressing. So one of the nurses suggested that I would just get an epidural just in case something, you know, if they need to take me real quick, it's already in. So we got the epidural, but only worked on half my body. but they were very sporadic contractions, just a weird delivery. Yeah. And so then about, I don't even know what time it was, Sunday morning, I was 10, you know, they checked me and I was 10 centimeters. So got all ready. The NICU came down, you know, the whole team came, you know, because baby, you know, was going to be small.
Right.
And so I delivered him in one push. He did great. He was 4 pounds, 5 ounces and had this great lungs just crying. And so they were so relieved, you know.
Good. And you avoided a C-section, which is wonderful.
Yeah. Which I'm so glad.
Yeah.
And but then after mom went up with baby and to the NICU, then I started just hemorrhaging. I started bleeding. They couldn't get it to stop. And then my doctor started having to pack me, which, you know, is just rags going up. And he was just pushing on my stomach for probably about 2 hours. And if you had a baby, you know how sore you are, especially pushing on my stomach. And they had about 7-8 nurses coming in. They were trying to get IV started on me and they couldn't. They kept on collapsing my veins. My anesthesiologist had to put in another IV because I had them on both hands. You know, getting blood drawn, I couldn't stop shaking. It was just, my blood pressure was everywhere. It was just very dramatic. My stomach was actually bruised for almost a week after the whole process. Like I have a picture of just being completely bruised. You could see like the handprints of him having to just like continually push on my stomach.
Did you have anyone by your side during any of this time?
No, I didn't, which was really difficult because at the time I just had my husband go home because we weren't sure what was going on. And I'm like, I'm fine, you know, and the mom was there for the delivery and it just happened so fast. You know, mom went up with baby, of course, and then I was just kind of by myself and then it just happened and then I didn't have time to call anyone or ask someone to call. And I was just trying to like be so strong and tough, you know, and I'll just get through it. You know, I didn't make a peep or sound the whole time they were doing and I could feel everything. And so finally, when he was just packing me and just stopped just to see what would happen. And he let me know if it wouldn't stop lady, then I was going to have an emergency hysterectomy. Which is kind of, at the time, I was just so tired and so just out of it. I'm like, I don't care. You know, you're just.
Yeah. Just well, you're tired from having a baby and the kind of the trauma and the buildup of of what you were experiencing, right? And probably concerned for the baby, concerned for the intended parents. So you have all of that adrenaline and then you're losing blood, which makes you tired. So I can't imagine how you must have felt.
Yeah, I was holding it together pretty good, but then when the nurses were like, do you want me to call your husband? And I'm like, that would be great, you know? So she called my phone. Once I kind of like, you know, after it's been a while, you know, and the minute I heard his voice, like, I just started bawling, you know, I just started crying and I like couldn't even like, the nurse at first course called him, was like, your wife's okay. You know, I just needed to call for her. She's fine. She's stable, but we need you to come down and she would like to talk to you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I like could barely get any words out. So my husband came rushing down and actually like my husband came and I started crying when he got there. And actually like two of the nurses even started crying because it was so like just overwhelming, you know, like exactly. They're like, you're so tough and you've been so great. And it's totally normal to see someone, you know, familiar to then start breaking down because you can.
Yeah. You're comfortable or maybe not comfortable, but yeah, their presence is reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And all of this is going on during COVID, right? So were you nervous at all as far as like some of the hospitals aren't letting visitors in because of COVID precautions?
Yeah, I was really we stay very up to date with our OB, like, okay, who can be in there? Who can, you know, like we were the whole time, like up until make sure that someone could be there. And luckily the hospital allowed for me to choose a support person and have the intended parents there. So
our hospital was
very great about that. My mom wasn't too happy about it because she wanted to be there. She actually came to my window and like waved to me and talked to me through the window and like security, like shoot her off.
Our mom's the best. I mean, I'm lucky too. I have a great mom and I imagine her doing something like that. Yeah. I'm banging on my hospital window.
And it's really funny.
Okay. So your husband shows up and have they stopped the bleeding? Are you good? Or what's next?
At first we were waiting for like another hour. And so it was supposed to be 9:30. He said that, you know, I'll take him out and see how the bleeding is. And thankfully at that time, when he came in the room, he, you know, pulled everything out and was like, you stopped bleeding. Like, that's great news. You know, like you stop it. I'm not going to put you up in postpartum. Like, I want you still down here in the delivery room because I'm going to watch you overnight because if it starts again, we're going straight in, you know? Mm-hmm. So
how old are you, Alicia?
I'm 36.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, and like my first question was like, can I eat? No. I had an E and I felt like in days, you know, and so my husband went and picked me up in and out and it was the most amazing meal of my life.
I bet.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite of a last dinner. It's a first dinner and it's so delicious.
Exactly.
So you stayed on labor and delivery for a while. And then can you tell us, were you able to stay a couple of days and then go home? Did you get blood transfusions?
No, luckily, which surprised even my doctor because they were taking blood, you know, the whole time just to see where my levels were at. And he was like, even though you have extra blood from the pregnancy, you had like additional blood, which he's like, is kind of crazy because I would normally just give you blood transfusion at this point, which I've had blood transfusions in the past, but like this time I didn't have to. And so, which was nice, not have to do that.
But scary. Yeah. Very scary.
So yeah, they finally moved me up in the morning to postpartum. And then, you know, I was there for a couple of days because my blood pressure was still pretty high. Normally with all my other pregnancies, I've been released within 24 hours. So this was the first time like being there for like 2 days. And so that was hard because then I can.
I'm sure you just wanted to go home to your own babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to go home,
be in the comfort of my own bed.
Exactly. And then I started pumping in the op, you know, while I was there and getting colostrum and just sending it to NICU and getting him going on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was doing okay.
Yeah, he did great. He only had to have an IV like just for a couple of days, and then they took it out and they had a feeding tube for a little bit, and then they were able to take it out. So he did great. Like, he was out within 8 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And so, doing well now as a little munchkin at home. Good.
He is. He's doing great. Just totally thriving.
Yeah. So after your postpartum, you at home, how are you, how was your transition home and how has that been?
So the first few days was okay. I went home on a Tuesday. Tuesday. And then I ended up going to the ER on Friday because I just wasn't feeling good. I just felt off. Like, I know how postpartum feels. It's been my 7th time. And I didn't feel good. And, you know, it's just chills, just felt achy. And when I got to the ER, my blood pressure was really high, but they couldn't find anything wrong. And so they sent me home and I didn't even see a doctor. Like, just a nurse was there. The doctor didn't even come to see me. It was really bizarre. They sent me home at like 3 a.m. and I was exhausted. It was just a joke. And then I had a doctor's appointment Monday morning, and then my blood pressure was low. It was like 80. I can't even remember. It was like 80 over 55, like dropped dramatically. Mm-hmm. And she sent me over. She's like, "Do you have the chills?" And I'm like, "No, I don't feel good. I know something's wrong, you know." So she sent me over to get blood drawn, and apparently nothing was wrong. But then so when I went home, I climbed into bed because it just felt horrible, and I just started shaking. I could not get warm. I turned up my thermostat to like 76, which I never do. And I had like shirt on, sweatshirt on, socks, you know, under covers, but I was checking my temperature and there was no temperature. To later find out my battery was like bad.
Oh no. That's the case it is with thermometers, right? Like, you never need them. And then when you do, their batteries are dead.
Or like low or something. So it just showed I had a normal temperature, and I'm like, something's wrong, you know? And I was like, my husband got home from school and I was just doing horrible, just shaking and just did not feel good. And he's like, "We need to go to the ER. I'm like, "They're not even going to listen to me. Like, why should I, you know?" And he's like, "Let's go." And then I just started having left side pain. And so finally I went down and they got me in. I had 101.8 temperature. The ER doctor actually met me in the little triage thing and got me in a wheelchair and wheeled me to my room. This is a different ER, thankfully. And he was so great and helped me out and just started. And then the nurse came in and ran all this tests, and I had sepsis and so sick. I just started feeling horrible, and I just like couldn't even like talk, and my energy was just zapped. Luckily the nurse I had, she had gotten sepsis before after delivering a baby. So she knew what to do immediately. She just started me on antibiotics, you know, just did everything. She was amazing. She knew how I felt, you know, so it was great. We had really great, she was just a great nurse.
And so she really took care of you.
Yeah, immediately. Like, she's like, "I don't even want to take the urine test or any of all this stuff. You need antibiotics right now and pain meds." And so she got all that and got me going. And then I got endometriitis, which is the infection of the uterus. Mm-hmm. And so they actually had to send me down to the other ER, a bigger place, because I was postpartum too, and they don't have postpartum at this other hospital. So I took an ambulance drive down there, and I was there for 5 days, just on straight antibiotics for 24 hours. And I was still pumping milk during that time, asking people, be like, "Is it safe to pump? Because I don't want to take anything that would hurt the baby, because it would be passing my milk, you know?" And I had a dump at first because I wasn't sure, but then they, you know, got me on something that was okay.
You are so selfless. Like, I'm just, your demeanor through the whole emergency, it sounds like, you know, you kept your cool. And then through all of that, you still pump for a baby. And then through feeling terrible and going back to the hospital, and then your concern is, you know, taking something that would be helpful for you, but not for baby. You are You're a treasure.
Thanks. I just felt bad that I went early. You know, he came early and I just wanted to provide the most like beneficial, nutritious milk for him, you know, to get him big and strong. And so that was just on my mind. Not even like myself was just like down the line, you know, you're just want the best for him. So yeah, it was tough because I couldn't see anybody there because of COVID. It was a different hospital who didn't allow visitors. So I didn't see my kids. I didn't see my husband, my mom. So that was really hard. You know, thankfully we have FaceTime, you know, so I could visually, you know, talk to them. But that was rough, you know, not being able to see my kids for 5 days or my husband. And so, you know, and then trying to figure out, okay, my husband just started this school semester the day after I had the baby that Monday. It was just like so much going on, but we made it. We pulled through.
Yeah. It's good to have good support when you're in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So I went home after that. I got home and a couple days later, I started feeling bad again and like pumping was hurting and I had streaks down my boobs and I knew I had mastitis. And I called my OB and let her know. And she's just like, no, that's impossible. You're on so many antibiotics that I highly doubt that you have mastitis because I was taking 11 things of antibiotics for about 2 weeks. So I had so much antibiotics flowing in my body, but I knew because you know when you have mastitis.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I went to a different doctor and she diagnosed me with mastitis. And then I got it a second time. And then I also ended up getting thrush on top of it.
Oh my goodness. So how did they treat your mastitis then if you were already on so many antibiotics?
She changed me to a different antibiotic. Oh, wow. And it helped. And then because I was on so many antibiotics, I got thrush. Right. I'm like, you know, I don't have baby to me. I was just pumping. And at the time, my doctor was like, you need to be done pumping. Like, I know you want to do this, but your body is just, it's done. Like, it's mm-hmm. not recovering because I couldn't get out of bed. I was just laying down. I had no energy whatsoever. Like, it was horrible.
Yeah. I'm glad that she said, you know, you need to take care of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you need to hear that, you know?
Yeah. I was thinking it at the time, like, I'm not getting any better, but I still want to pump. But I would like almost like start crying when I knew I had to pump because I was so tired, you know, when I'm just, but I knew I had to do it and just trying to push through it. And
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Mm-hmm.
No.
Is there any expectation from the intended parents that you keep pumping?
We had agreed because my last surrogate, I pumped for 8 months with no problems. And so I'm like, yeah, I can pump, you know, like we can try a year or just see how it goes. And they're like, okay, well, just let us know ahead of time if you think of stopping pumping so we can find someone else because they really wanted breast milk to be used only, not formula. And so I'm like, yeah, you know, I had no problems last time. So I don't see what would stop me from doing it now. So I guess still in my mindset, it's like, regardless of everything I've been through, I'm still going to have to do it. You know, like I still want to do it.
You felt like you had made a commitment and you wanted to mm-hmm. honor that commitment. Did they know what was going on?
Yeah. I mean, I let them know they were here. Like, because when I was in the NICU, I mean, when I was in the hospital for 5 days, I would just pump and then call the nurse and the nurse would just send it down to the NICU. So it kind of like worked out, like we're both in the same hospital. And so they would just send the milk. And I knew it was really beneficial. Like he barely lost any weight. I have very good fatty milk. Like I'm very proud of my milk.
That's great.
It's like cream, you know, like it's anyone
the best.
With it.
The best.
Yeah. And so I felt good about it. And I wanted to keep him healthy and getting big. And I mean, he's already almost 9 pounds now and he's 8 weeks now. Yeah. Wow. And he's doing really well. And so I just wanted to keep it up. And I kind of felt guilty, you know, it's just all these emotions.
Mm-hmm. Did they ever get to come see you while you were in the hospital?
No, they weren't allowed to see me either.
Gotcha.
just because of COVID, they weren't allowing anyone, you know, so I can't even see them. So finally got, when I got released, I got to see them once before they moved till they went up to Idaho. So I got to see them and take pictures and hold them and drop off more milk. And so it's good. And then everything else happened after that.
Yeah. So I'm genuinely curious. So if you were still pumping for them, do you ship milk then to Idaho?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I ship it in dry ice and I mail it up to them.
So I want to back up a little bit because you mentioned it quite a bit, but your blood pressures, were you ever on medication? Were you ever diagnosed with preeclampsia? Are your blood pressures back to normal? What happened with your blood pressure?
So the blood pressure at first, I thought it was just because my mom had had a heart attack the weekend before. So the doctor and I just, she was asking me how I was doing and I was telling her about it. And so we just kind of figured the blood pressure was high from that, just stress, but it wasn't from stress. We're not sure why I had high blood pressure. I guess it's just, they call it hypertension, is when you just have the high blood pressure and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I only gained like 3 pounds the whole pregnancy. So I wasn't swollen or gained tons of weight.
Did you ever have any like headaches or?
No headaches, no blurry vision.
Oh, good. Nothing.
So it was just the blood pressure. So delivering, the blood pressure is off. Postpartum, I think with the sepsis, you know, my blood pressure was off and on, you know, low. And then once they wanted to get me on high blood pressure medicine, but then I was researching it and it was saying it would be bad for a baby to get in the milk. So I didn't take it because I was worried about it getting in the milk.
Alicia, girl, you've got to take care of yourself. Your babies need you.
I know. I mean, it got fine after that. Like, my blood pressure has been great since.
Okay.
Everything's been fine. I've been getting it checked and doing it. My mom even bought, instead of buying me like good, like flowers for delivering the baby, she bought me a blood pressure machine. She's like, here's your present. Like, oh, check your blood pressure.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And so now it's totally perfectly fine. It's been like 118 over 68. And so it's been fine for weeks now. So it was just a weird coincidence that it was like that.
Well, studies are showing that surrogate pregnancies are more likely to result in preeclampsia or high blood pressure. So I don't know that it is a coincidence, but I'm glad that you're back. You're feeling better. After you went home and found out you had mastitis and then the thrush, are you better now? Are you feeling good?
So I was doing good, and I had it was supposed to be a 6-week checkup, but actually I had it at 7 weeks just last week actually. And I will now just learn just a couple of days ago that my doctor is advising me to have a hysterectomy. Because I now have a uterus prolapse, a bladder prolapse, and a rectal prolapse. So I have like 3 things of prolapse uterus, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So he gave me an option, which he said it would be best if I just went ahead and got a hysterectomy. You know, I could put it off, but it's inevitable, you know, that I'm going to need one. So I figured, let's just get it done and over with. So then I can just move on and be done. You know, I'm just trying to stay positive about it. It took me by surprise.
I bet. Do they have any reason why?
They just said probably from the pregnancies. You know, I've had numerous pregnancies and just, you know, also traumatic ones. You know, this last one was traumatic, and just the result of what my body's worn down. Yeah. And so I guess that's it.
Yeah. So if you were to know all of this was going to result, of course we can't turn back time. And we, you know, and now there's a little guy in the world. Mm-hmm. But do you think it's worth the risks?
This last one was rough. I would probably would have had second thoughts about doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's been this time around was very different than my other surrogates, you know, other pregnancies in general. And I would definitely have second thoughts. Like if I could talk to myself back then, you know, like before I signed up, like I wasn't prepared for all of this. Definitely yeah. not.
The woulda, coulda, shoulda question. It's an impossible question to answer. So how is your family doing with all this? How are your munchkins doing with you? Has this affected them at all with seeing you not doing so hot?
Yeah, I definitely could, you know, they don't like to see me in bed and that I don't feel good or that I can't play with them. You know, now I can, but you know, for a couple of weeks I couldn't or even see them. And they're like, we just want you home, you know, like just want to play with you. And it's definitely affected my kids and they've been very more clingy on to me, which is fine because I love it right now, you know,
but yeah, like extra snuggles.
Yes, exactly. And so they're like, oh, you have to do another, because we mentioned the hysterectomy, like I'm going to have surgery and it's going to be about 6 week recovery. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, I don't want you to. Can you just be not going to the hospital anymore? Like we hate it, you know? And they're just like, but who's going to watch us, you know? So it's kind of breaks my heart, like knowing I'm like, I'll be home, you know, and I just can't move around a lot. And hopefully, I know it sounds kind of selfish, but it's like, oh, I have a vacation trip with our whole family. There's like 22 of us that we do a family trip in June. And I'm like, can we just do it like right now? Because in 6 weeks, that's when we're leaving, you know, and I wouldn't be recovered by then. Plus it's summertime and I want to take my kids to the lake and swimming in the pool and river, you know, it's summertime. And
yeah, that does not sound selfish. Yeah. Not one iota.
So I've been like trying to push my doctor to be like, can we do it like right now? And he's like, it's like 4 weeks out. And I'm like, oh, like, so that definitely affects my family and my life, you know, like mm-hmm. it's summertime and I'm going to be laid up for a couple weeks and, you know, it's surgery and it's yeah. major surgery and they're going to be doing laparoscopic and vaginal surgery. It's like both.
Yeah.
And so I'm definitely not looking forward to it, but I also just want to get it done with so then I can enjoy my kids and being home with them for the summer. So it definitely affects my family, you know, and my husband, and I'm, you know, trying to figure out, okay, who's going to watch the kids and the first couple of days, you know, when, because he graduates in June. And so it's a lot for your family, you know, like.
Do you think, considering what you've been through, do you think that women who go into this to help others and for whatever reason, do you think that they can really understand the gravity of what they're signing up for?
No, I don't think they really understand the risk and what can happen because you don't know, you know, if you haven't been through it, you don't know what can happen. That's also why my husband and I both decided that I wouldn't do surrogacy until we were done with our own children in case something happened, because things happen and then you can't have children, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, if I had like, just like right now, if I had only two kids, then I wanted to have a couple more. Well, now I'm going to have a hysterectomy. And if I didn't already be done with my family and now my chance of having kids of my own, I can't anymore, you know, like,
yeah.
So, you know, that's your whole, I mean, it's your ability to have children, you know. Luckily, I'm already done having my own kids and I wasn't planning on having any more. So it's less, I want to say less hard to have a hysterectomy because it's going to be difficult, if you know what mm-hmm. I mean.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I avoid surgery at all costs. No way. But yeah. And I think even beyond that, even beyond being done with your family, is that you have an existing family to take care of, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so through all of this, luckily, and it's such a blessing that you have such great support, but mm-hmm. like, you know, your kiddo, you know, you have them and they need mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I appreciate your honest answer there. It's a hard conversation to have. It's a very deep personal conversation. And I'm so thankful for all of my guests who come on the show, because this is a hard topic to talk about. So I just want to say thank you for that. Some people think, and recently we've gone up against some legislation, and I've read some articles, that surrogacy is great and that it can be regulated, and that's what we need. We need regulation. But then I hear stories like yours, and my argument is that you can't regulate these risks. Like, you can't say, okay, you can't have a hemorrhage or preeclampsia or have a C-section because we have a rule and we're regulating this. So, you know, and yeah. What do you think about that? Being through this process and being in California where surrogacy is legal, do you think that other states should adopt that? Do you think it can be regulated?
It's hard to say because, I mean, you can only do so much in regulating, you know, the surrogacy, because you go through a process. I mean, you talk to a psychiatrist to make sure like your mental state can, have the ability to not try to hold on to the baby and thinking it's yours. You know, you have to do that, a psych evaluation. Your husband has to do a psych evaluation. I mean, you have to get blood taken. Your husband has to get blood taken just to make sure everything's good. You know, you have to have numerous ultrasounds. You know, you have a lot of requirements to be a surrogate. I'm not sure what else they can do to vouch that you be an okay candidate. You know, they look at your past medical history. I mean, it's hard to say because you never know, like I've had normal pregnancies and then this happened. So it's hard to, I mean, you have all these things that you go through that seem like, okay, everything's fine and everything should be good and have a good delivery or pregnancy. And then you don't. I don't know if that's the hormones or the IVF is what makes it the way it is, like the preeclampsia or C-sections. I don't know if that is what makes the difference of a normal pregnancy of yours compared to being a surrogate with IVF.
Yeah. There's some theories as far as, you know, because it's not your genetic child. And so kind of like a similar idea as like organ donation, right? It's a lot smaller, but still your body is growing this being that has none of your genetic
DNA.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean,
it could easily possibly be the reason why you have these issues. You know, if you think about it, is because it's not your DNA. That's why you're on all these hormones. So your body would recognize it's a baby and will hold on to it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're all of a sudden pregnant, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your body's like, wait, what happened? Huh?
Exactly. Like, wait, I don't remember this happening.
Yeah.
Well, and so it is because surrogacy is foreign to your body. It's not your DNA. It's not what it's intentionally supposed to do. You know, like you're kind of tricking your body of being like, hey, like, let's grow this baby. It's not yours, but you can still grow it, maybe.
Yeah. Some women, surrogate women I know have called themselves like incubators. So
kind
of that concept, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, goodness, I just want to say thank you so much for coming back on the show and talking to me again. You're absolutely lovely to talk to. And I know it's really hard and it's really, you're going through the thick of it right now. And so I just want to really say thank you so much for your time and your energy and your selflessness.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad that I can share my story and maybe it can help someone who's deciding to do surrogacy can see the pros and the cons and what can happen when you don't expect anything to happen because you've had normal pregnancies and it can easily happen to anyone, you know, out of the blue, have all these issues.
Yeah. Well, I'll be thinking of you. And I would like to thank each of our listeners for tuning in and showing up. May you each continue to think beyond the masses. And if you think that others might be encouraged or educated through your story, much like Alicia's, send me an email at callie.fell@cbc-network.org. That's Callie, K-A-L-L-I-E, fell@cbc-network.org. Again, thank you, Alicia.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.